Listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Beautiful day, and I probably owe many of you out there a cup of coffee because I'm sure you couldn't resist dancing and trying to hold that cup of coffee steady. But anyway, happy days are here again. But we got to keep on making sure that they stay here. Don't let them take them away from us with bad politics and bad behavior and on and on and on. So anyway, I just thought I would shake up the place a little bit and see if we had anybody out there half asleep. So, sorry about last week. We had a technical problem, and that's the way life is. And when you have a technical problem, you come back and you try it again. And they say that's crazy, but not really. Eventually, the antennas will work. And while speaking of that, antennas... when we started this effort, people would tell us, well, you should call the big newspapers or you should call the bigger papers and the TV and what have you. And I want to share with all of you out there that I won't say how size or quantify the size of this show and this effort, but let's just put it this way. Just this quarter... we've had 200,000 downloads just at the website. That's not the live listeners. So, and the year isn't done. So that's substantial when you consider, and we still have another quarter to go. So the idea is to get it out there, and I encourage you, a lot of you, I see you on the street, and you send me emails. If there's something bothering you or you just think you need to express it, I would love to have a forum. It's here, right here. It's not going to cost you anything, if it's, especially if it's going to benefit others and make things a little bit better for all of us. Call in, and we'll give you this hour, the next hour, and next week, as long as it's for the benefit of us all. So having said all of that, I'm going to be talking about do-gooders doing bad, I guess. I don't know how I would title this, but I want to share with you, in my efforts, personal efforts, is try to do environmental, do justice, senior citizens being ripped off. We want to protect that. Don't want senior citizens to be robbed and stolen from by shysters and children and on and on and on. But sometimes there are people out there that means well, start off doing well, doing the right thing. And there are some that fall under the banner and get in the tent with you and never intended to do good other than for selfish reasons. And in the last 20, since 1992, I was making an effort in documenting the impact on sharks and shark finning on sharks in the population, because it was an environmental concern that many people were not noticing or taking notice of here in the Pacific. So back then, while working for the government, I proceeded to document and found, you know, container loads, bag loads, boat loads filled with shark fin. That was in 1992. And I've pursued that effort for many, many years. And there are many people out there that know what I've contributed and what I'm continually looking at this. Well, there are others out there who would love to do the same thing. And there's the Pew Foundation or the Pew Charitable Trust. Most of you have heard them in some form or fashion. There's a Pew study on this, or the Pew funds PBS or a portion of PBS, and their studies, as I say. But in that, there is an environmental arm of that. And that's what we're going to be talking about, how their representatives came to me here in this state, in hot pursuit, I should say, of me, looking to get my information on shark fins and to make this effort a more global, national, to cause a cessation or stop the shark finning. And the Pew Charitable Trust, about 3 or 4 years ago, they made a run at me trying to get me to work for them. And I don't work for any political group, any environmental group other than EnviroWatch, and we share what we have. But they tried to buy, I had documented the trail of shark fins coming from Marshall Islands through the Pacific and the details. So they tried to buy that, and we wouldn't sell it to them, but we wanted to participate. Well, that fell by the wayside. But then last year, they sent a gentleman who was representing himself as Pew, not as a contractor, not as a anything other than basically the Pew Foundation. He was working for them, and they wanted to do something about the sharks and the shark finning that was going on. And that person's name is Jeremy J. Personius. Now, I have met a lot of people that come along and they want to do good, and you're elated when you meet them. But this gentleman came to me. He represented that the Pew Foundation wanted to have me participate with them again and go to Washington, D.C. and testify and take my information and wanted to put together a video and a movie for this information and go and testify before Congress to get a national or an international or national ban on shark finning from the U.S. side. So he represented that they wanted the pictures, they wanted the video, they wanted this, and I took him under my wings, not knowing that this man, as later learned, he was a contractor of sort. It's not still not clear, because even the Pew people have been really flaky when it comes to disclosing specifically and reacting to this. But he promised that this Personius, J. Personius, who's a local gentleman here, who had worked in the state capitol with some of the state legislators, he claimed to have worked with Clayton Hee and Fred Hemmings and what have you. And these are the types of people that we have working, as you'll see later on. So we met, provided him a substantial amount of documents and information, which is intellectual property, information that I had collected for more than 18 years. And he proceeded to represent that. Give you an example. He was going, Katie Couric, 60 Minutes, was interested in this. That proved to be false. Washington Post was poised to do a substantial article. That proved to be false. And on and on and on. So in this effort of meeting with him, you know, you're doing this to protect the environment. And when you mention the name Pew, to me, that's the ultimate in. They have the money, they've done good things, they do good things. So you don't really look to a check much, because no one would dare represent and misrepresent Pew. So this whole effort with this J. Personius, I will describe him now as a covert operative operating for himself to make himself look good at the benefit of Pew. Because apparently they were paying him, and I'll describe and explain more details. But I went out, and we needed video, and he represented that we would be flying to Marshall Islands, the Marjoro, and those areas where I've documented the shark fin efforts, and there's a very sensitive area out there. And so I even recruited other people to do this, that their hearts are in the right place. And this was not an effort for money. This was something that is very sensitive. Shark finning is a bad business and not good for the environment, not good for anything. So I invited a friend who is a commercial photographer, diver, experienced, a trainer, paddy trained, done everything on the East Coast Bermuda and Florida, wherever. She's been there. So this is Karen Herman. And Karen accompanied me with J. Personius. And I have Karen on the phone right now. And, well, she's not yet. Hold on. Anyway, what had happened was we have a phone connection here, a problem. But anyway, what happened was this gentleman, Jay, when you go out and do these things on shark finning or any kind of investigation, you can have an opinion, but you better have the facts. The facts are going to be there. You have to gather them. And we needed to show, and I'd shown and documented which containers they were coming in, how often the shipments were coming in, 6 ton, sometimes on occasion 16 ton of shark fin at any given time per shipment. Sometimes they would occur twice a month and be landed right here on our shores. So we had that and we documented it. And when you go to this and you look, what we did was I took Jeremy down to show him, because remember now, this was going to be a national effort. This was going to be Pew, for Pew, and Pew was funding this effort, not for financial profit, but to bring shark finning finners to their knees and abandoned it. I was glad to participate. So we took Jeremy down and showed him some of the sites, locations where the shark finning was occurring and the shipment. And it was absolutely, his eyes, he was overly impressed, and something that he and any other person would never see. Because you see, there's amongst the environmental community, they talk about shark finning, but none of them in this entire process that they did, they were afraid to go downtown at nighttime. And we'll be talking about some of the prevailing mindsets and the attitudes. That there was this, quote, Chinese mafia that was handling the shark fin, and they would kill you, and on. What a gross misrepresentation that had taken place. And really insensitive, and I thought it was kind of for the environmental community to make such statements was absolutely, I thought it was bigoted and racist, but you let them deal with their own headaches and their own feeble minds. But that was far from the truth. It's a commercial effort. But none of these environmentalists would go down at nighttime and wouldn't even get down because they weren't just, let's face it, didn't have the expertise or the smarts to go down and infiltrate or simply even look at the most obvious things. So we took Jeremy down and showed him and the facility and explained and showed him some of the people that are actually smuggling, that were actually processing, and he was like a child in a candy shop. And Katie Couric is going to like this. This is what he says. Meantime, all of this is a big lie now. But he's here trying to get this information, working me. I call it working me, to get this information on behalf of Pew. Now I have Karen on the phone. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
Good morning.
Yeah.
I understand that you're speaking about Pew representation here in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Yeah, I was sharing with my listeners and trying to lay this out. I didn't have already explained that you participated in a meeting or so and spoke with this gentleman. Could you share, not to corroborate, but just to share your firsthand experience and the representations that this gentleman made, Jeremy Personius made?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Just to give you a little bit of background, I'm a professional scuba
diver. You have a radio in the background. Turn your radio down in the background.
Can't quite hear you.
You got a radio in the background?
I'm a diving instructor and paddy open water, and I also do underwater photography.
Mm-hmm.
So I have logged thousands of dives and hundreds of hours of underwater photography. So when I met with this gentleman, I met with him for the purpose of seeing how I could donate my expertise. I wasn't going to charge him for it, in getting some underwater footage of both the sharks in and around the area of the Marjoro Islands, and also the healthy ones, and also the ones after they had been finned, so that people could actually see what happens to them when they're finned and thrown back into the water alive. So when I met him, he was very credible. He was very reputable. He explained to me that he was representing Pew, and what his offer to me was to join you or your team and come down to the down to Marjoro, and he would provide the camera equipment and the airline tickets, the stay while we were there, and then the information that we gathered would be a part of his ongoing presentation that was going to be a national coverage of the shark finning and be part of the documentation that was going to be presented for testimony in Washington, D.C. And I understood that you had given him all the different components leading up to that part. The only thing that was really missing was the live footage of the sharks in that area. So at that time, we were looking at dates. I took some time off of work. He represented to me that Pew was 100% behind this, that they'd already spoken with you, they'd already solidified all of the plans to put this into play, and that he was happy to have my experience to come along. So at that time, we just were waiting to hear back from him to set that up, and it was as if he just fell off the map after that. I didn't hear back from him. I never got any further information. It was like he became completely invisible after he had obtained the documentation that you'd spent probably the last 10 or 15 years getting. And I don't think that anything that he said to me during that hour and a half meeting that I had with him was true, because none of it came to fruition.
Mm-hmm. So when we talked to him, he promised to buy the cameras, and he promised that Katie Couric and others were going to air this.
Yes, exactly. When you have the opportunity to work for an organization like Pew, and someone's representing that they're from Pew, it's like, you know, the golden egg. It's like National Geographic.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very excited. Have worked in the Caribbean with other national news organizations, and I participated in Sports Spectacular and did underwater footage with Armando Jenik in the U.S. and British Virgin. So I wasn't completely new to this, but I was excited, and every single thing that he said, including setting up the dates, the times, the flights, the hotel, the boats, it was just
fault. And when we talked to him, sat with him, did you detect any that he was pulling a game or playing a game, or was he forthright or honest? I didn't see that in well, that.
No, I was completely blindsided by this, because, you know, to me, he was professional, you know, clean-shaven, button-down collar type, you know, certainly not a scruffy misfit. He was truly very articulate, and you know, the guy could really talk the talk. And to me, he was a Pew representative, so there was no reason for me to doubt that. Although I didn't get a business card, just by his own introduction and just by the way that he had a briefcase. He had things that he brought out. He was working with the calendars. He was setting things up with people in Washington, D.C., and people who were working with him already in the island. He was sort of coordinating things. I had no idea whatsoever. I believed it to be true, and I was looking forward to going. I took off from work to go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it was for me. I when I say was, I don't look over my shoulder, but I always have a measure of that I watch, and I will tell share with my listeners that when I spoke with him, there were many things that popped up, little red flags. So what I did was to actually record his conversations with me, because there was some gross misrepresentation. But again, you'd think that you give the benefit of doubt. And then if it later plays out, that then you have it documented, because he was moving quite fast. And then a couple things I attributed to just maybe things didn't fall into place. But again, his character, and when you talk about shark finning and banning shark finning, no one would dare come in and play a game with me or with anyone else or the public when something of such a sensitive nature, right?
Well, that was the representation, And certainly he had done his homework, because he did have a lot of documentation. He did use a lot of big names. Mm-hmm. He seemed to be in with the in crowd, should we say, with the pew folks, and having that really high level of what his background would be. So I don't have the same background as you do as far as having the ability to really research these people or where they're coming from, or like you said, recording, but just on a first impression basis, I thought he was the Pew representative for this area, and I anticipated that he would use our footage and all of your work that you had accumulated. I knew that you'd given him quite a bit already, and that he had shared it with the higher-ups, and I didn't really expect him to just pull the rug out like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was operating really loosely, and after one lie, another lie. That's why I talk about this, because to show people how vulnerable people are in the environmental community that mean to do well, and amongst them are wolves, or people that are self-centered, motivated for money, and want fame, and want to. And then he's the one who brags and boasts that we did this.
Right, right. He puts the we in.
Okay.
It was unfortunate, I think, and I don't know what resolve came from it, because I don't know if he even stayed on the island, or if he's still working with Pew, or what. When all the shark finning information came to light in the news, I never heard your name mentioned once. Mm-hmm. Although I will always remember, as everyone here in Honolulu will, your photographs and your tireless work towards that shark finning bill. So one person is not going to erase all of that, but from my perspective, he did enough damage in his representation of Pew here that no one I know as divers or underwater photographers would ever work with them again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm not going to keep you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Karen. All right. Well, the real issue that we have with this is that with the Pew Foundation, there is a Washington Post article talking about this back in 2007, this Pew effort. And it goes, some Americans think of the environmental community as a fractious bunch of free thinkers, that if you put two of them together, they would generate at least three different opinions. But now two groups, the Pew Charitable Trust Environmental Program and the National Environmental Trust, are trying to buck that reputation by combining to form the Pew Environment Group. And then it just goes on. Now, some of the people involved in this were Joshua Riker, who was director Pew's Environmental Program since 1990, and will serve as managing director of the Pew Environmental Group. It's a way of putting together a coordinated strategy. Now, this gentleman, they're going to have offices in Australia, Europe, Latin America, Western Pacific, and Indian Ocean. And absolutely, nothing is to be said other than they apparently support this effort by Mr. Personius. Mr. Personius was absolutely misrepresenting things in his position with, and did misrepresent with Pew. And I wrote a letter to Pew, to Mr. Personius' boss. And it was it was a letter, and I'll lay some of the things out that I talked to Mr. Rand about. And I'll give a list of them. Pew, this is what Jeremy had represented. Pew had contacted a Washington Post reporter that they frequently worked with, and she was poised to write an article. The New York Times was ready and waiting to write an article. Katie Couric of 60 Minutes and the Evening News were ready to do a story involving me and using the work that I had done. They had already set dates and conference calls with Katie Couric and her staff. The higher-ups at Pew had already authorized him to use me for research and travel to South America and other foreign areas, as well as Tahiti, Palau, the Marshall Islands, and other Pacific Islands that I am familiar with. Pew would purchase video, still cameras, and housings for underwater video to get better B-roll. Pew would make and pay for travel arrangements and would pay an additional $1,500 above other expenses for a five-day work week. Personius would register. He would register with the internet company that I had provided him to track shark finning. Pew would bring me to the Washington, D.C. office to meet Pew staff and testify before the Senate committee that would be receiving testimony for shark fin legislation. Pew needed all the documents, photographs, and video that I had obtained over the years during my extensive research, and that Pew would compile this information for testimony on my part. Pew would contract with me to provide commercial video. Mr. Personius had me to do a small video, and I sent this up to D.C. Over the Internet. And believe it or not, I didn't get any response from Pew. And I'm going to play the response that I got from Pew's, when I initially called Mr. Matt Rand, who is Jeremy's boss.
You know, I think what's going on here is I don't think you're getting all the straight details on a lot of this stuff. I think Jeremy does work with us, I think that it doesn't sound like Jeremy has been on the up and up and straight forward. I'm very upset with him, and I will be reprimanding Jeremy for his actions. He misrepresented a lot of things in here, and I'm quite upset that I can call him and reprimand him and basically give him hell. And
right.
That's what I plan on doing. I can tell him he can no longer have any contact with you.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell him to turn over anything that he has of yours
mm-hmm.
to you.
Mm-hmm.
I will then pick it up with everybody else that he works with here to make sure that they're fully aware of what has taken place. And,
yeah.
You know, I have a contractual relationship with him.
Right.
And, those contracts are time limited, so
yeah.
I imagine we will look at that time limitation and have a serious discussion about whether that any sort of contract goes forward with.
Okay, that was Mr. Josh Ryan, Rand. And Mr. Rand simply didn't respond after that. I also contacted Rebecca Rimmel, the president and CEO of that organization, the Pew Foundation. Did not get anything from them. No response, several calls, emails, and letters to the president of Pew. No response. Now, Pew, apparently, they did get the information. And did they use it? Don't know if they used it. But what I did notice was that This year, during the current, the past legislation, legislative session, there was a meeting. And a meeting of the minds, and they got together, and Clayton, he, and others put in this bill. And there was a news story that came out, or an organization, I guess it was out of a company came from Germany and did a video. And this video somehow found its way, the video crew found its way to the facility that I had uncovered and had already put on the news. And they represented that this effort, they came from Germany to do an undercover investigation. And they represented that they had to go behind locked gates because this was a great effort. It was locked. It was guarded, had guards on it. And that was all fabricated. You can walk up to this place, and you can find it by smelling the shark fin, the urine, and the smell of the processing, the process. And you didn't have guards. In fact, you had nothing, just a locked door and maybe a few people working when they did work outside, and it was quite visible. But the storyline was that they made it... it was undercover, and they snuck in, and all of the information that I had already disclosed openly, overtly on TV, they repeated and represented that they had to get it through covert effort. So this is what happens. Now, back to Jeremy Personius. Personius took his efforts and made himself look good, made Pew look good. And now, how does the money get funneled? How does Pew pay Personius? Now, I'm informed that the Conservation Council for Hawaii, a local organization here, receives money from Pew. This is per Personius. And in turn, they handle the basically the banking or the financial efforts of this Personius efforts here in this town. Now, I did some filming for Personius and Pew, and in fact, the Conservation Council for Hawaii did fund it and paid, wrote a check for $500 or so to my company. And again, when I called the Conservation Council, they had no problem with the activities and the actions, and this is Marjorie Ziegler, action of Mr. Personius. She didn't think it was a problem. I did share with her the letter that I had sent to Pew management. She wasn't alarmed or, in fact, felt that we didn't express concerns that we didn't need to make this public, and we all should get along as one big happy family because we're working together in this effort to protect the environment. So this is the kind of mindset that you have in this entire process. And it's just absolutely, it's unimaginable that one person such as Personius would lend himself to this and then be supported. And he is still, as in the last month or so, representing that he's affiliated with Pew. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but you heard the recording of Mr. Matt Rand. So what do you do with situations like this? These are people that come out to do good things, and they do things that they take your trust. They sit up and they say, we're here to protect the animals, and we're here to do these things. So what do? Do we continue to donate? Do we continue to believe? Do we continue to accept what it is at Pew? if they will permit such a person to work on their staff or work in their program and take no action and ignore my letters, what are they doing? You know, so it's one of the things, they were involved in the designation of the Papahanaumokuakea sanctuary, a marine sanctuary. Pew was quite instrumental, and what they do, they put the money behind these efforts, and Reichert and the others basically serve as the managers, and Jeremy Personius also serves to work the local communities to come and provide testimony. They even went after Kitty Simons. If you remember, the Western Pacific Fisheries Council chief, executive director, Kitty Simons, was charged and assaulted with words of attacks on her character. And that was all done through, there were people involved like Kay Kobunk and others who had also working with the Pew Foundation. So this was a funding, an effort funded by the Pew. This is per Jeremy and others that, and also Keiko Bunk and others that have talked to me, that told me that it was, that was what was happening. Now, the problem here with this is that with Pew, some ask, where did the money come from? Well, remember, Pew, the J. Howard Pew was the chairman of Sun Oil, and he, in turn, put this together prior to his passing. I will tell you that this was an oil man, and apparently he's doing good. There is no problem with what Pew do in these communities. I know in the inner cities and many things, and medical and what have you, they contribute a lot. But I can't imagine them having and allowing Jeremy Personius to work amongst them or work, be affiliated with them and in this effort. It is just puzzling and mind-numbing, I would say, of how this is going. But anyway, I'm going to take a break here, and we're going to, I'm going to put a song here, and just we'll get back to you shortly.
Yeah! Happy days are here again. People gather round and tell your friend. It's great to be alive with a smile on your face. Yes, that's alright. No, you don't have to worry about your diamonds and pearls. You don't have to be around those kind of girls. You don't have to be the man who's eyeing fly.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Many issues here, and with technical problems and phone problems and antenna problems, I feel like the ant who got drunk. My antennas don't work. But anyway, we'll work that out. Been assured by the engineer that we won't have that to occur again. But what I wanted to do is talk also about a subject here. We try to be fair and balanced, and we're changing gears. And with the Pew, we're still going to watch this and see what they do. We probably, because this was intellectual property, I am going to be seeking to address this through legal means eventually. And if at minimum, just to convey to the general public out there that beware of what happens when you engage with, and this is what can happen. The do-gooders are doing bad in this instance. So I will share the story as many occasions as I can. So anyway, but again, here's another local topic that I want to share with you. And this one here is quite interesting in that it's... Again, we trust our politicians, completely different, but it's about trust in what we do and how people take us for granted, I should say. And here's the Abercrombie Schatz campaign. Now, on this show, you've heard me do a story on Hal Barnes, and you can find it on the website in the news section. Hal Barnes worked for the mayor and was appointed by Mayor Mufi Hanneman. And Mr. Barnes had some issues with the finances and what have you in his personal life. And it was brought to our attention, so we looked and found that there are some cases here regarding where he was being sued. And on an instance, he was actually, his check or salary was garnished. And... I mean, they were served. The city office was served to take money from this gentleman's check. This is what the records show in court records. Well, Hanneman hired him, and Hanneman is no longer a mayor. But in pursuit of this story and in doing an investigative effort, I wrote this article, and I attempted to interview Mr. Barnes And he threatened to file a TRO and what have you. And the problem is, Mr. Barnes, as the records that we have, shows that he has a couple of aliases, Hal or Harold or Hall Barnes. And there are a couple of Social Security numbers associated with him. And we went and checked some of the information, NexusLexis, and found his address and what have you, local. And I spoke to his son, who's in a halfway house, and got his information. He gave me his office number. But Hal Barnes, for some reason, wrote the Neil Abercrombie for Governor's headquarters. And he wrote it to Josh Levinson. Now, Josh Levinson received this email from Hal Barnes, and I've made a public request for this information. Now, Hal Barnes, apparently this is the claim that Josh Levinson, who works for Neil Abercrombie, gets an email and proceed to share it with the general public to other people associated with the Abercrombie for Governor, Abercrombie Schatz for Governor campaign. And in there, there were some concerns, and this was communicated to me by the party that received the email from Josh Levinson. And Levinson told him a many of things, and the party that communicated this to me was concerned that the content of that was threatening, and was threatening body harm to me. This is the impression that he had received from Josh in talking to Josh. Josh offered to send the email, the actual email, to this party. Well, Josh refused later to send it, but then he then said, well, he would give a portion of the email, quoting some of the content of the email. And here's what it says. Hey, Scott, here was Hal Barnes' response to our email reminding people to vote on September 18th, and I voted for Mufi. Tell your douchebag, Carol Cox, he is blank with the wrong person. Blanking with the wrong person. That's the quote that Josh Levinson, who works for Neil Abercrombie, put out there. Now, I have attempted to contact Neil Abercrombie. I've visited his campaign headquarters to ask for a copy of that document, of that email. I've contacted Brian Schatz. I asked him to assist, and maybe thinking that the lower-ranking people didn't contact Neil Abercrombie. Now, this effort started back on the 20th of September. Still no answer. Now, my concerns is that I would like to know specifically what if there were threats, and why did this gentleman go away after speaking to Josh Levinson, Scott, that is, learning and hearing what Levinson was conveying to him, why did he go away thinking that was threatening? And so I'm still concerned. Well, I contacted Bill Conecco. I phoned and I visited his office, and his remarks were, you can do what you got to do. We're not going to release that information. It is customary not to release this information, communications between the campaigns. But remember now, this information was already released. I discovered it and learned of its existence because Josh Levinson was doing just that, releasing the information. And so, why would Neil Abercrombie's, and now it's Neil as well. Let's put the onus on him, because I've gone, I've called his office. Others from the community have written him, hand-delivered a note or letter to him apprising him of this, and Neil Abercrombie has not responded. Now, this is consistent with what we get from politicians. This is what we get with the Obama administration. This is what we get, you know, they send you emails and want you to send $5, want you to sign this, but there's no exchange. They don't respond to you. So why do we need them? And Abercrombie, with this, this tells me this is something we should be concerned with. Is this an omen of what's to come? Get them in and don't vote for them if they are not going to communicate with us. Because if this, they didn't offer the letter and they have no interest, and why would they shield any remarks, foul remarks about anyone? And they didn't solicit it, I hope. But there's a bigger problem here, and I've raised this with the Abercrombie Committee, and that is, did in fact you choose to withhold that information because you were concerned that you would not get Mufti Hanneman's vote and his support for the campaign? So in other words, throw me, the citizen, under the bus for Mufti Hanneman's support. Now, Mufti Hanneman lost the race, so we should be done with that. Well, that was my concern, and those were my suspicions that, and I had to, again, express them to Abercrombie's committee, that, one, why are you shielding this email? Why are you protecting it? Why did you release and discuss it openly? But when I, who the target of that email is, you refuse to release it to me. And I express concerns that you're just throwing me under the bus because you want Hanneman. Well, they denied that. But then, to add insult to injury, this is how, I guess, what we have to come to expect with the Democratic effort and the Democratic Party here in Hawaii. Same business as usual. Abercrombie speaks of justice and what have you. And if something as simple as this, and he can't even respond, at least send an email saying, I'm not going to release it. At the lower level, they made a decision, and I'm concurring. Didn't get that. So I get an email from Bill Kaneko. Aloha, Carol. The first phase of our campaign is behind us. Mufti Hanneman has graciously pledged his support for our campaign, and we have joined forces with our running mate, Democratic nominee for Lieutenant Governor Brian Schatz. They only have 5 weeks to go, they say. But when I look at this, I wanted to bring this out and share with you, the listener. This is why some 8 years ago, we, the public, myself being a registered Democrat, would not vote for a Democratic governor, because this is exactly the same behavior that we attempted to get rid of by voting in Linda Lingle. Yes, it might be difficult to swallow that we might end up voting for Iona, but when you have behavior such as this over this simple issue, an email that they didn't write with threatening content, and they were willing to pass it around and discuss it openly, but when I asked for it, they wouldn't. Why? Am I, my stature diminished to such a point that I'm irrelevant as a human being, or right and wrong? So this is what we now can adapt to or be prepared to accept if we allow Neil Abercrombie to win. Now, I didn't agree with the Hanneman administration because it was clandestine and it did its own thing, and people in workforces didn't respect the law, didn't respect the people, ignored right and wrong. And here we have now a smiling face, a congressman who, for some reason, just the language to refer to me as a douchebag, and to say that I don't blanking know who that I'm messing with is unacceptable and should not be tolerated by Abercrombie or anyone. And I file a request for that information. We'll see what the public request is. But again, I'm not backing down on this. Abercrombie, Schatz, I've gone to other politicians asking them to bring this out and at least provide me the email. And none of them can deliver. None of them can talk to Abercrombie, apparently. So he hadn't become governor yet, and he's unreachable. So he's ignored my complaints. And it is my intent from here out until the election day that I want that email and all of these things, whatever he promises, comes back to this one issue. This speaks of character. If he's willing to do this, then what else is he willing to do? You see, that's the kind of behavior that, and my bigger concern now is that if Hanneman is throwing his support behind him, will he appoint Hanneman? And this is just a question. Will he appoint Hanneman as head of the transportation department, who then can shepherd in the rail because he supports the rail? Now, that's a guess on my part and a concern. But again, to protect this worker who writes an email, and I guess that email contains other things that would be damning. So I'm going to raise this issue. I want to see that email for many reasons, for personal reasons, and to bring out and share with you, the listeners, what is going on here. There's something ugly about this. If you're willing to hide an email such as that, what if there were illegal acts on the part of his cabinet members? Would he not speak? Would he ignore the public? What if we had abusive campaign members or abusive cabinet members abusing their authority, abusing finances or what have you? Will he hide and just ignore and you can only talk to the lower-ranking people? This is what we ran away from. If you recall, 8 years ago, the Democrats had an attitude that we owed them something. They owed us nothing. And it seems like they're hoping we fall for the bait again and vote them in. And I'm astounded. I mean, I was going to give them a chance, but this is really an eye-opener. And some of the other things that are going on now give you an idea why I'm concerned that Hanneman will be appointed to this committee by Abercrombie or have some major role in the transit. And that is, I believe that Hanneman knew that he was going to lose the race from his own pollings and other pollings. Prior to the race, some 15 days at least before the election. And I offer that because Bill Brennan, for example, was the mayor's spokesperson or the public relations person for the mayor, Mayor Hanneman. And Bill Brennan was absolutely the top dog spokesperson for the mayor. You called, you had to talk to Brennan. Bill Brennan left the mayor's office September 3rd of this year, some 15 days prior to the election. Now, why would Brennan leave the mayor's cabinet and go work for the transit authority? He is now, as of September 3rd, 2010, he was officially working for, this is per the personnel office, working for the Honolulu High Capacity Transit Corridor Project. Now, why do you suppose he would jump ship if he thought he had a good chance of becoming the mayor's spokesperson who would be voted in as governor? Did they all know? And there's Trudy Saito, who was jumping ship. I'm told that she went to or was considered for the Board of Water Supply. but turned it down. Now, I don't have the facts on that one, but I do know that Bill Brennan. So September 1 of 2010, Bill Brennan signs it says here, contact mayor's office. It was a public relations press release sent out by the city, and it states, Caldwell announces start of wastewater tunnel project. Okay? And then any questions you have, please contact Bill Brennan at the mayor's office. That's September 1, 2010. Now, on September 2nd, we see another press release, city to begin construction of the fire station in Eva Beach. This time, contact Bill Brennan, 768-6928. Now, on Friday the 3rd, another public relations press release, Caldwell announces September 12th parade of champions in Waipio. Media contact for that is Mr. Scott Ishikawa. So, why did Brennan leave, and how was he assigned to, and how did he get the job at the Honolulu High Capacity Transit Corridor Project? Are they stacking the cards? Are they putting the yes men in and the people that know how to cover the front door and the back door? Is this what we're going to get if we vote for Abercrombie? Is this what we should come to expect? I don't believe that that this letter has that I'm requesting from Abercrombie has much to do with this, in that he's withholding that, but look at the other things and the email that he's confirming Hanneman is going to support him. So when a politician wants something, I guess they want it bad enough, they'll lie to you in one way and tell you, as Abercrombie say, we want justice and education for people. But then he can't find himself a big enough person or respectable enough person to release this information and let it be known that he does not condone or invite this kind of communications, and he will never conceal it. He will always be open about this. He didn't write it, he didn't author it, he didn't request it, or maybe there's something else more sinister in that letter that they don't want to talk about. So eventually I will be pursuing it in other means, but again, because it is a campaign committee, the rules are different as public relations and public information. But I have enough that if Josh Levinson tears this letter up or destroy it, as some say he might, I think that his communications to me, for example, with a personal phone call that we have recorded, that he left a message. But this is Josh writes me, and I'm glad you contacted me about this. I will call you in the morning to talk to you about it. The bottom line is that the email did not refer to you as a goon, nor did it threaten to commit bodily harm to you. I'm assuring you, assuring that your web postings about Barnes' affiliation with the Hanneman campaign and Barnes' subsequent receipt of an email broadcast from the Abercrombie campaign rendering people to vote for the Neil Abercrombie on September 18 triggered this angry response. But again, as I shared with Scott Nelson, the email, while angry in noting that he would be voting for Hanneman, did not refer to you as a goon or threaten to commit bodily harm. But yet he refused to release the email, but he only gives a specific excerpt or quote from it. So why release any part of it if you, in fact, have a policy that you don't release anything? So anyway, we're going to get off of here, and we'll talk with you later on. And thanks for joining the Carol Cox Show. And hopefully next week we'll be, for the live listeners, back up and on the air and running. Aloha.
Thanks for listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.